Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom, and with me again, filling in for John, still missing, is Chuck. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, dude? Not much. Just had my daughter's first birthday and got some ink done.
Right. People who follow us on social media know I also just got some ink done. We recorded an episode of our other podcast, the Locker Room Podcast, while I was getting inked. So we had no plan, no idea what we were doing. We just knew that the three of us were going to be in the same spot at the tattoo parlor with the doors locked. It was a private thing because, you know, people that follow Marco on social media, he's a tattoo artist. He had access to the shop. So we just went in there before anybody got there.
Wow.
Had a little private tattoo party, and he was working on me, and we did the podcast. So it'll be pretty interesting. Fans of the Locker Room can enjoy that. But we have been getting emails that some of those we answered on that episode of the Locker Room, and others I've been getting back to people and saying, hey, that's something we've been discussing about dealing with on the show. Would you mind if we did an episode? And they're like, oh yeah, no problem. One of the emails we have been getting regularly is asking us about getting hired on. For example, one of the emails we got just about the military was asking if they should go for special forces or infantry. And I figured it would be a good chance for you to tell them you have to start. You don't just go to special forces.
There's some contracts you can get. They'll put you SF bound, but at the same time, you're going to go to Ranger school. You're going to have to pass that. And then you're going to have to try to go special forces, and no one's going special forces as a cherry, a little brand new boot. And right. No way. You have to, you're going to be infantryman first. Then you're going to try to go on a follow on school and probably not going to make it.
Right. So if you're looking at whether you want to go into special forces, that's great. Just start with joining the Army and realize that recruiters are like a senior on prom night. They will say anything to get into your pants. Recruiters are
always start from the bottom up.
Yep.
You get more respect that way, and you earn your position. And that's what people look to for a leader.
Yep.
If they earn their spot, and did they work their way from the bottom, and did they suffer with everybody else, and did they have rapport with all these other guys?
And don't be born on third and think you hit a triple. That's the worst mentality to have when you go into any sort of law enforcement, military. But speaking of, and the reason I brought that email specifically up, not only so Chuck could answer it with the very obvious start out low and then work your way up, is because we brought in Ken. How are you, Ken?
Good.
And Ken used to work kind of overlapping with my old man. Ken's a little bit younger than my old man. And you came on the job probably about a decade later. But you worked for the LAPD, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I worked for LAPD from 1980 to 2003 and said, I'm done.
Yeah.
Leaving
those
now.
Those are some good years to have worked there. And then it was also a good time to be done.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's just one of those jobs, you know, you get it. And people think it's this all encompassing thing. But, you know, when you think about it, it's a job. I don't, you know, I didn't use a hammer and nails. I used a gun and a baton, and it's a job.
Right.
You know, and it can't be your life. So I just decided, that was good. That was a nice run. I'm going to leave now.
Yeah,
so I did.
And always have a life outside of law enforcement, because yeah. once law enforcement is gone as a career, guess what? All the other stuff that came with it is gone too. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have it, if you don't have a life prepared outside of it, get one, because you'll be shocked at how little you have left if you make law enforcement your only, you know, focus in life.
Yeah.
But the one of the reasons we brought you on is because we've been getting a lot of emails, Chuck, about oral board questions, written tests, physical fitness tests, basically the topic of how to get hired, how to get a job in law enforcement. And Ken, you have a podcast that deals with just that. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, I have the police applicant podcast, and I got that. There's a little bit of a history behind it, in that I started when LAPD backgrounds, when it was AIS, it was run by LAPD. LAPD officers were all the background investigators from 97 to 01. And then they kicked us out in 01 because they were bringing civilian retired background investigators in.
Right.
So I got kicked out to Risk Management Bureau. And then and then in 2003, I retired. Yeah.
Well, if you got the boot to Risk Management and only retired like a year and a half, 2 years later, I could see why.
Well, they offered me, they said, you can go to patrol or you can go to Risk Management Bureau. And I said, I'll go to Risk Management Bureau. I'm going back, because what they were doing at Risk Management Bureau was they were just doing the consent decree.
Oh.
And that's the one where you probably have it now where it's Teams 2 and all this kind of stuff. That was the beginning of that. And so I didn't know what they were doing. I just went there and did my time and then retired. And then I retired in 2003. In 2006, I said, I'm bored at home, because I didn't really have a retirement plan. I mean, I wasn't going golfing and fishing and all this stuff. And so in 2006, I remembered, hey, they civilianized backgrounds. I'll go back. So I went back to the city for the personnel department and worked there from 2006 to 2018.
Oh, so that's not bad.
Yeah, so I did 35 years with the city and just retired in 2018 as a background investigator. So I've been doing background since basically about 1997. And
so did they carry that time over, or did you start from, you know, 06 to 18?
06 to 18 is a civilian.
Yeah, separate retirement system, right?
Separate retirement.
Right, right. So I pulled a pension from them after 10 years, and you have to meet a certain age criteria. And so once I got that time in, I decided I was going to leave.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was like my old man. My old man worked for LAPD, took his 20-year pension, then worked for the state of California. And after, you know, a certain amount of almost 20 years with them, took his CalPERS pension, and now he's now he's 65 and he gets Social Security as well. So stick with it, boys. It does pay off.
It does pay off. And there's a lot of people there that guys are retired from other agencies. CalPERS, you can't go back work for CalPERS.
Yeah.
So they go to the LA City system, get a pension there.
Right.
Wow. So basically, to answer your question, I've been doing background stuff. I had a policebackground.net. I've had that up since 2007, helping candidates. And I wasn't able to profit off of it because it was a conflict of interest.
Right.
So once I retired in 2018, the plan was always to go back into business with policebackground.net. So I do background consultations.
So now you monetized it.
Yeah.
Attaboy.
That's awesome.
So that's what awesome. I do now. Yeah.
So, well, let's just jump right into it, because we're getting through the ideas of how to become a police officer. And I think basically what we should do is probably tackle what are the phases, like what do you expect to go through as an overview, and then just kind of talk about the because there are some traps, I would say, that people fall into along the way. Maybe not necessarily the written test. Maybe not necessarily the physical fitness test to see if you pass the MQs, but once you start getting into backgrounds, polygraph, oral board, especially, you know, there's some pitfalls that I think people can make mistakes that otherwise would not have been a problem, except they kind of shot themselves in the foot, and they may not get the job, they may not get hired on, but it actually might kind of be their own fault in some ways, because they mess things up, or they're not prepared. They don't do the homework to find out what they're up against.
So basically what you're saying is people go in there half-assed, don't prepare.
Yeah.
And that, quite honestly, you're spot on, because candidates, a lot of times, they not only, oh, what do I say? How do I say it? There's a lot of candidates now. It's a different generation. A different generation. And they, a lot of times, are just, I just want to use a kind word, but I...
Dumbasses.
Ill-prepared. Yeah.
They're not prepared, but they're lazy.
Yeah, well, there's a whole generation of people that expect things to be handed to them. That's a whole other problem.
If I can piggyback off that real quick, I just did a, while on duty, I asked if I could speak at a pulley function for Marine Corps at their local recruiting station in our area. And so I was like, okay, sure. You know, as long as I don't have any calls, I'll just stay clear. And, you know, but, you know, it seemed like a pretty mellow morning. I went and spoke with these young men. And they were all this newer generation, and exactly what you're talking about. They're lazy. They don't prepare themselves. And I spoke with them, and I had to continually ask questions. I'm like, hey, do you guys have any questions regarding this? And silence. And I'm like, right. Come on. Like,
cause they don't even know what to ask.
No, I'm like, do you have questions about boot camp? And there was one kid that he asked the most questions, and he was going to, I could see like, okay, he's going to be prepared. This is what he wants to do. And he wants to come be a police officer afterwards. And he was asking some really in-depth stuff. And some, I'm like, you probably shouldn't ask that, but he was still asking the questions, but no one else asked questions. And when I had to ask, and I was basically going one by one, I'm like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Long story short, they all pretty much said the same stuff. I want to go into, like some sort of computer stuff. And I'm like, in the Marine Corps, we have computers.
Oh, yeah.
and it's like something like aerospace. And I'm like, well, that's great. But everybody is just shooting for aerospace now. And I'm like,
They're all watching the commercials that say you can get a high tech job in the military and then turn it into a civilian contractor career.
But they don't ask questions. They don't.
No.
They don't prepare themselves, and they just kind of sit there like a deer in the headlight.
They just think, I'm going to walk in and I'm going to get some high tech career, and then I'll, you know, be done after 4 years, and then I'll go into the high tech civilian market.
Yeah.
And that is not how that works.
No.
And similarly, that's not how being a cop works. I get people that say, well, and it's, I guess, similar to the question of should I go infantry or should I just go straight to special forces? Mm-hmm. It's should I go and be a patrol officer or should I just go into detectives? I really feel like I want to go into detectives.
Yeah, you can't. You got to start from
that's
the bottom.
That's not even, you can't, no. Like, if you want to do that, go join the FBI.
And I told that to someone.
Be a forensic accountant.
And guess what she did? She went to the FBI. She went and did an internship, because she was in college.
A sit-along?
Yeah. She did an internship with the FBI for like a year. And I was like, because all she wanted to do is come on the job and just start climbing the ladder. And I'm like, well, that's cool and all, but how long do you expect to work the streets in the field? And she was like, oh, well, just... you know, bare minimum. I'm like, well, that's cool, but you're going to get no respect.
Right.
I was like, you're going to get no respect as a leader. You'll get no respect as someone who's controlling everything. You'll be so disconnected with what actually goes on because you have been more time on the inside than you have on the outside. And you need to spend time on the streets to learn how to be a cop. And you need to spend, you know, this may be an old school mentality, but at least 10 years in patrol to really know what it's like. And they always have let me know if I'm off beat, and Tommy, let me know if I'm off beat. But they say the first 5 years you're learning, and about the fifth year, you're pretty much solid where you're not going to be, there's going to be nothing on a call that's going to surprise you. Are you going to be the best at it? No, but it's not going to surprise you.
And that's when they give you a French fry, and you can put it on your sleeve if you want, but that's when that French fry signifies that you have done enough to actually take your training wheels off and be ready for just about any call they throw at you. You might have never seen it before, but you can compare it to a call you have seen before. You can compare it to a caper you have done before, and you have enough experience on the job that it doesn't, you can figure it out.
Right. And at that 10-year mark, you're pretty solid. I mean, if you've been pushing a black and white for 10 years,
oh yeah,
it's pretty solid. And those are the people when they promote to sergeant and then they promote fast to lieutenant or, you know, captain or whatever the department calls for it. You know, some agencies go straight to, you know, sergeant to captain, or leave out captain and go lieutenant to chief of police, depends on the size of the department. But they promote quicker after that because they have the experience, and then that's what they want up top.
And that's what they need.
Yeah. So, Ken, why don't you give us the overview of basically the step-by-step hiring process of all the different steps that are going to be involved, and then we'll kind of get into each one a little bit.
Please.
Well, you're catching me off guard just a little bit, because there's parts of the process that I don't deal with, but I know enough about them that I can tell you basically what they are.
Yeah, we'll just do an overview, and we don't have to get in depth. I'll cover some of the, like, the written tests and things yeah. like that, you know, the physical, the minimum qualifications for physical fitness. And those change, obviously. You know, some states have different written tests, and some yeah. states have different minimum physical tests, but we're just kind of giving you a general overview, a non-specific overview.
Right. And depending on what department that you're applying with, if you go to a department, and I won't mention the name of the department that's in Los Angeles, but if you were to go to different departments, there are departments that the standards are a little bit more watered down
yes.
than other agencies. Yeah. And if you go in there and that's your experience, and you apply there and you go, that wasn't too bad. And then you go to some other agency and you get your ass handed to you in the background, the oral interview, the PFQ, all that stuff, you're going to be in for a rude awakening. So there's the oral interview. Well, first off, there's probably the written test,
right?
Some departments have written tests. Some have LEPD just went from the essay. You had to write 3 essays, and they just went to the written test now. And the written test, you know, it's not something you can possibly study for it, but the written test is basic high school education equivalent.
Yeah, it's like studying for an IQ test. Either you know the information or you don't. There are books. You can go to if you have a Barnes & Noble that's still open by you, or go to Amazon or whatever. But you can get they're kind of like the SAT prep books. There are police yep. exam prep books,
mm-hmm.
and uh-huh. it will give you some of them have sample tests mm-hmm. from around the country. Others have just general, you know, study guides. Some are all nothing but practice questions and explanations to kind of, you know, give it over. But written tests, that's what you're going to see.
All it is, it's usually.
Are you an idiot?
Yeah. Basic math, English, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so there's the oral interview, the written test, the medical exam, and there's 2 parts of the medical exam. The first part is probably going to be the written, which is the MMPI, the psychological, that one that's, God, what is it? 800 questions or some ridiculous
Minnesota thing. Multiphasic Personality Index.
Yeah.
I think it's 300. It's either 350 or something question. Yeah. It's a lot.
It's gone up.
Has it gone up?
So you've got to take that written test along with your physical exam. And the problem with the physical that people mostly have with the physical is they're fat.
Yeah.
Fat, and they can't pass the weight.
Yeah,
the BMI. So that's, they go in there thinking, I'm cool, and then they fail the medical part on the weight.
Yeah. And for military guys, knees and back. Knees and back. That's if your doctor finds a problem with your knees or your back, that could screw you.
Yeah. And then there's the background. There's a pre-background. A lot of agencies do a pre-background. They'll give you a questionnaire with about 10 questions or more that are automatic disqualification questions. They weed you out there. Mm-hmm. Then there's usually it's called the PHS, the personal history statement, application. And a lot of people are not prepared to complete that either.
No, they don't have all their information. They don't even know what they're going to need.
I've had people come into backgrounds, and the thing is, it's half empty. I mean, the thing's not completed, and they tried to fill it out the night before, and you're not going to do that.
It's the size of a manuscript.
It
takes you like a couple weeks to fill that out, because you need to call former employers, and then it's going to ask you for at least 2 references for each employer. And if you were in the military and you keep in contact with some of your old supervisors, will they still be there? No, but they were your supervisors while they were there. And for the military listeners, because I know there's a lot of them, just find the base address of where you were stationed at. Like, I was stationed at Courthouse Bay in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, at a second track. So I put the headquarters, second tracks, at a camp Courthouse Bay in Camp Lejeune. I found online the mailing address for them. That's what I used for my employment. And then I found a few supervisors that I used to work for. They weren't still there, but that's who I used. And would they answer? I don't know, but you have to put whatever you have. and then at least two coworkers. Did they get out? Are they still in? Who knows? It all depends on when you got out and when you are, you know, trying to apply for the job. But you put out what you know. And if the business went out of business, you still put that information down. They still need it because, right. And you have to put down coworkers. If you only had one coworker or whatever, then you put down all the information you have. And if you can't find anybody, don't make it up. You just explain like, hey, I don't have anybody, or the number I had is
disconnected.
Is bad.
They'll figure it out.
They'll figure it out
if they can. But it's weird stuff. Like if you don't have your Selective Service registration information, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have transcripts, if you don't have, like, there's all these other things that they are going to ask you for that you better be prepared with.
And Ken, I had this question asked to me multiple times personally. And this is for you. If there are people out there that are listening and they're have questions on, well, I got fired from a job, should I still put it down? I would say yes. Wouldn't you say yes?
Well, I can let me rephrase the question for you. I got fired from a job. Should I lie on my application?
Exactly. Right.
That's the question. No.
So let's save that for when we actually get into backgrounds, because there it's going to be, I really want to spend some time on two things, oral boards and backgrounds, because I think that's where people make the most mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there. And we've had some specifics about what's going to disqualify me. And we've also had some specifics about how do I prepare for the oral board? So we've got written test, minimum qualifications physically in some cases. Like, can you, there used to be a 6-foot wall or a chain link fence or, you know, the run or a jog, dummy drag. There's all kinds of things that, you know, little cone pattern. Different departments have different things that just to make sure that you're not a complete, you know, freaking dodo bird that just flops around on the ice. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some coordination and some physical ability. And then, like you said, pre-employment background, and then the 2-step medical, which is mental and physical. And then in some cases, there's a final step, which is a chief's interview. And I don't think LAPD has anything equivalent.
They don't.
Right. But in other agencies, they'll take all of the top candidates, and you have to go sit down in front of whether it's an area commander or assistant chief or the chief of police himself in our case, and they interview you just like a boss would interview you to see if they want you working for them.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the polygraph as well, and you have the psych oral interview.
Right. And those are, so the psych oral interview is kind of connected to after you take the psychological written test, and then the polygraph is somewhat connected to the background.
Yeah, so usually the background is done after the polygraph, and the psych oral interview is usually done after the background's done. So they get the whole file, and they look at it, and then along with your MMPI and stuff, and they're able to ask questions based on the entire, all the information that they have.
Now, I'm pretty sure LAPD does this, but I'm not positive. Most departments have to give you a conditional job offer.
Before your medical.
Before you can go do the medical, because without a conditional job offer, they can't actually get confidential medical information from a shrink or a medical doctor. So bear in mind, when you get that conditional job offer, there's a huge word in there, conditional, right? In other words, you can still fuck it up and get DQ'd or disqualified from the process. But they do make you a conditional job offer. So don't run home and say, I'm going to be a cop. No, say, I am almost at the point where I'm going to be a cop. Because even once you get hired, you still got the academy, you got FTO. There's a whole other ways you can fuck it up.
A lot of people get excited about the CJO, but it's just a legal thing. So they can give you they can take you to the medical.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything really.
No, it means it means we're doing this because we have to, so that we can get all your information from the doctors.
Right. Right. So don't get excited.
Right. So rather than get into the written, because like we said, you could sort of study for the written, but it's like studying for any other basic skills, you know, IQ test or whatever. Either you know the information, or you know how to add, you know how to read, you know how to write, you know how to speak. Or you don't.
You know, reading comprehension, or you don't.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, if you're going to study for that, go ahead and get one of those books, especially if you didn't, if you're the kind of person who doesn't do well on tests, because there are people that aren't good test takers, then yeah, prepare. But let's skip forward to the next. I think the first big stumbling block, which would be the oral board. And what I'll say is, for us, an oral board consisted of two sworn and one civilian personnel from the city, right? So it was usually two cops of different ranks or different assignments, and then either somebody from the city planner's office, or somebody from public works, or somebody from the fire department even, or, you know, some other city employee that's a civilian. And the three of them are going to sit down across the table from you. And it's going to be the weirdest, most formal job interview you've ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, a lot of times the people that they pick to do that, they don't want to be there. They're assigned to be there.
Right.
And so, well, sometimes
the civilian employee is all excited. They're like, "Ooh, this will be fun." But I guarantee you, those two cops are like, "Oh God, I got to sit through a week of oral boards."
Because they're assigned, sergeants and sergeants, the detectives, they're assigned to do that. And they're like, "Oh my gosh, I don't want to do this." So if they're across the table from you and they look really bored, you need to finesse them. I don't put your tap shoes on, wake whatever you got to do. And then after X amount of oral interviews on that day, if you're the last one and they're whatever, you know, just I'm putting something down on paper or something, but they take their job seriously. But you've got to go in there, and the oral board is big. Big. I mean, it doesn't matter. You could be a West Point graduate. You could have a master's degree, all kinds of cool stuff. But if you don't pass the oral board, you're dead in the water.
Yep. So the oral board will determine two things. Number one, if they take you at all, right? But also how fast they take you.
Yeah.
Because your score on the oral board, it's not pass fail. It is literally graded. And how well you perform on the oral board will determine based on how many people they're hiring, how many positions are available, when they're looking to hire. They'll take the top people from that oral board first, and then hopefully they'll still have jobs open when they finally get to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of these tests, you talk about the tests, and a lot of the tests are deselectors.
Right.
So they're just made to weed out people.
Right. Right.
And some departments, like LAPD, uses a score of 1 to 5, and anything under 3, you're done.
Wow. Really?
Right. With other agencies, it's 1 through 100, and some agencies, depending on their, social justice warrior makeup, you may have to get a higher score than other people.
Yes. Yeah, so you can get additional points added to your scores for things like being a veteran. But you can also get them added to your scores by being a certain demographic that is more desirable, because there's being pressure exerted on their department that says, we don't care if they're a better candidate, we care what they are.
Right.
What I've been seeing a lot though is they try to mimic the demographics within inside their city or wherever they're patrolling to match that for their department. So like, let's say if there's 50% of this or and 40% of this and 10% of this, they're going to try to, in some departments are going to try to,
if your city's 30% black, you need a 30% black police force. If your city's 40% white, you only need 40% of white people.
Yeah. But here's the problem with that is that historically white males and Hispanic males overwhelmingly apply.
Right.
And blacks and females are at the low number. And those are the numbers that they're trying to get up. So recruitment can do whatever they want, but if you don't get the people to apply, you're not going to get those demographics met.
They have to be qualified, quality applicants.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, someone who is less qualified but checks those other boxes ends up leapfrogging you. So if I'll tell you what, I was looking at becoming a cop in the late 90s, early 2000s is when I started doing all this. And at the time, I was told, especially with an agency like LAPD or some of those other agencies, you're a white guy. You had better be the best white male they have ever seen in their life.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a ton of other white males and you're going to have to beat out 99% of them because you're not competing for one of the open police officer spots. You're competing for one of the open white male police officer spots.
Correct. And it's no secret. Everybody knows about it. They don't publicize it, but it's no secret.
Right.
There used to be a statistic out that said for every police recruit graduate, everyone that graduated from the academy represented 1,000 people that applied.
Yeah.
And so on your best day, not even concerned with demographics and all this other stuff, these numbers and everything, aside from that, the majority of people don't even pass the entire process because it's not just it's every time you pass something, that's just one thing you passed. There's right. about, I think there's a total of 7 things that you have to pass, right. backgrounds, all this stuff. And anytime you can get dropped, anytime.
Right. It's kind of like, you guys remember the Indiana Jones movie where he's got all those like riddles he has to solve. And if he doesn't solve one, it'll kill him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
like that.
Okay. You passed that. You're still not there. You're just not dead.
No. And right. I would say for your listeners that if you're serious about becoming a cop, it's not a thing where you go, oh, I think I can do it. You need to research all of it.
Yes. Yes.
And be
ride along. Top.
Yeah. And, you know, with departments like the LA County Sheriff's Department or LAPD, they're huge departments, right? The smaller agencies, they may have 2 spots open and they'll have 300 people apply.
Right. Well, not now. It's cut
through. No. You need to be in the top of your game.
Yeah.
If you have any desire. And then with an LAPD, they're in a hiring moratorium right now. Hiring moratorium. Is that like a freeze? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but
it is in 2021.
So, but there's some interesting things about like the oral board. There are, and this is what I was taught, there are some kind of basic do's and don'ts, both in your presentation of yourself and in your presentation of your answers. And I think some of those things, like we can go over. In fact, I can remember if you guys can. I've sat in on oral boards and I've taken a couple. I can remember certain oral board questions, and some of them are so standard, like it doesn't matter what the specific verbiage I use. You guys are going to be like, oh, I remember that question. For example, here's a good one. You and your partner walk into a liquor store, you know, to get some coffee and some, you know, soda or whatever. And you see your partner pick up a candy bar. And see, Ken is already laughing.
You shoot him right there. You shoot him.
Right. Your partner picks up a candy bar and he walks out. He says, bye. Bye, dude. And waves at the clerk and walks out with the candy bar and clearly doesn't pay for it. And then the next question is always, what do you do? And then that's it. That now it's on you. And I've seen this answer go so fucking sideways. It is not even funny. It's I've literally had it go to where somebody is answering and you talk to them and you go, because they'll go back and forth with you. They'll discuss, you know, information. Okay, this happens. Okay, then this happens. Okay, then this happens. And they'll keep like they'll let you bury yourself as far as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been on oral boards where the applicant literally says, then I'll point my gun at him and I'll arrest him. And
wow.
you look at him and you go, so at this point of the question, you're telling me that in the scenario, you are now pointing a firearm at another uniformed police officer in front of this liquor store, demanding he turn around and put his hands behind his back and be arrested for theft, for petty theft, for stealing a candy bar. That's what you're telling me.
That's insane.
Yeah. So what are some of the, well, I'll tell you in that scenario, the biggest thing I would tell people is you have to be able to pivot, right? You have to be you have to understand that they're looking for people who have common sense and can understand how the real world works and demonstrate that they understand it in verbal answers.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine is a subject matter expert in oral interviews. She does the oral interview prep for my website. And she was a recruiter and a mentor for LAPD for 15 years or something like that before she retired. But we did a podcast with her just recently, and she had some very good tips. And one of the questions was, do they ask that question about, would you give your mother a ticket?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, they do.
They still ask that question.
Yeah. Ours was, would you arrest your mother for DUI?
Yeah.
To be fair.
A lot, you know, the answer that they want to hear is, yeah, I give her a ticket and then I do a vehicle inspection and all this stuff. You know, the answer is, no, I don't think I would give my mom a ticket. You know, I think I'd give her a warning, but you have to remember that these questions are a lot of them are baits, you know, they're traps.
Like you show up to a house and you see underage drinking through the window and you knock on the door and they won't answer the door. What do you do? You know, the underage drinking. I can see it. I kicked the door. You know, so I had.
What if they're just young adults and they look like children?
Right.
You can't check their IDs from outside.
So I had that same question, the mother DUI question. But we go through the whole thing, right? And I had given a very, because DUI is a little bit more difficult to navigate with your mom than a ticket, right? You can get away with saying, no, I'd give my mom a warning because cops give warnings all the time. Mm-hmm. But DUI is one of those like, oh, if you don't hook somebody for DUI, you are in a shitload of political trouble. Now it's your mom. And side note, there is a very easy answer to that question, which remember the phrase conflict of interest. That's all you have to remember, right? And remember that you're not the only cop working. Okay. So these are things you have to keep in mind when you're parsing out this answer. A, conflict of interest. B, you're not the only cop working. However, what was interesting is when we got to the end of it, they threw a wrinkle at me and they said, okay, so what if same scenario, but what if it's not your mom? What if it's the mayor or the city manager? Right. Mm-hmm. And right. So again, you're like, oh shit. You know, and you know, then they get you. Okay, well, I'll call a supervisor. Well, why? Why would you call a supervisor? Would you call a supervisor for a normal garden variety DUI? And now they got you freaking out. You're like, oh my God, I wouldn't call a supervisor for a normal DUI, but now I'm calling a supervisor. So now I look like a chicken because I can't make a decision. Da, 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 da. Those questions are really designed, and those follow ups are really designed to make you justify your answers. Do you have a thought process, or are you just spitting out what you think we want to hear?
Well, first off, we all know that command staff would never drive DUI. They would never do that.
You can't say that when I'm taking a drink. I almost spit all over the microphone because I literally know a DA of a DA investigator for the DA's office who crashed his G ride. Coming home from a retirement party DUI and then had to spend a year in an assignment where he didn't have to drive because he got his license suspended for the DUI, but refused to comply with all the FSTs. So they couldn't put it. They couldn't put a deuce charge on him.
And the news stories that have come out with command staff crashing cars and doing all this stuff. But it's one of those things where, that's a good thing about supervisors. Can I have a supervisor at my location and you hand it to them and you go to 7-Eleven, buy a Slurpee, do your thing. And that's their thing. Now they get in trouble for it. But if you get caught and somehow they always find out later that you took the guy home or something like that. It's going to get found out.
I had a supervisor point to his chevrons and say, see, this is where the shit falls on the top of it and then spreads out and drips down to everybody else below me.
Oh, man. I'll tell you this right now.
I was working. I was doing some traffic enforcement. I knew there was going to be a party. Now, it was a lot of bigwigs. Not going to name names or name areas or name departments or whatever, but it was a bunch of people getting together that are all at the top, really high up there. And so I was like, well, you know what? They need...
So the color brass was involved.
So there needs to be some safety in the air. I was like, perfect. I'll go and I'll do extra patrol for speeding.
Oh, you're an idiot.
Because no one wants to have speeders near their area. I was there for about a good 5 minutes. I would get my phones blown up and they're like, what are you doing? After the first traffic stop I went on, they're like, no. So I finished and they're, what are you doing? I was like, I'm doing traffic enforcement because everyone blows a stop sign and they all have like really expensive cars and just, you know, there's kids that claim this neighborhood. Yeah. I was like, I'm doing traffic enforcement like I always do every single day. So I always go there and I'd get like 3 tickets and I'd be like, okay, I'm done for the day, I'm done for the week, whatever. I was told to immediately stop what I was doing and go into a different area. And I was like, oh, okay.
Right.
And put 2 and 2 together. And I'm like, okay. I see how it is. it's ridiculous. So yeah, you get a supervisor. It doesn't matter we all know that if you're stopping a city manager, a councilman, a councilwoman, and they're deuce, or you're stopping the mayor, absolutely grab a supervisor because it's going to get spun out. And if you do something wrong, it could affect your career. And they always say,
going to affect your career. You're just 100%, 100%. And that was part of my answer is they say, well, would you call a supervisor in a regular traffic stop? I said, no, because a regular traffic stop doesn't have political ramifications for my boss.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, always, I mean, you gotta be smart about it. But then in these processes, these oral boards, especially when you're coming on the job, they want to know if you have common sense. They want to see you think through a problem. And you also need to prepare. You don't just go into an oral interview, regardless if you're on a job or trying to come onto a job. Any oral interview, you need to prepare for like a few weeks, maybe a month, depends. Go over a bunch of different scenario questions, write them out, study them, know them, and be able to go, okay, what if they ask this? Well, how do I pivot off of that and prepare yourself?
Right.
And then when they start seeing that, okay, he's prepared, the interview will go a lot smoother and it'll be done a lot faster. If you're not prepared for an oral interview,
they can smell it and they're just playing with you.
And then they just keep going. And you're like, wow, why'd that? And you talk to other people and you're like, how long was yours? Like, oh, like 10 minutes. How long is yours? 40? What?
Yeah. So, and here's the thing. Wrong. Ken just said it. Those guys are bored, right? They were assigned to be there. So when some turd dick comes in and sits down and he's a dumpster fire of a bunch of answers, it's kind of like now you're awake because you want to see what dumb shit you can get this idiot to say. It's and
a major deselector.
It's a huge deselector.
I've seen people who are really, and this isn't the laddering to the other agencies. I've seen people who are awesome, awesome at what they do. And they say one wrong thing and they're done. And it's okay, on to the next. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, you have to be prepared and you have to be smart and not all agencies are the same and you're going to have to vary your answers and you're going to need to know a little bit about the agency and area that you're applying for.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, geographical locations, how big it is, you know, stuff like that. Like population, know about the city,
demographics,
know the history of the city. Yeah.
They might ask you, who's the mayor? They might ask you who's on the city council
or
you
who's the chief of police.
Yeah.
Who's the assistant
God. Yeah. Who's the chief of police?
I don't know.
You don't know the name of the man you want to be your boss. So Ken, did your expert give you some or can you think of any common mistakes that people make?
Yeah, going back to what you're saying about the knowing this, the department that you want to work for, the city, the county, the state or whatever, you want to know because they want to know, what can you do for us?
Right.
You're selling yourself. So you need to know about the agency itself or the city that you're applying to. One of the tips that my friend gave me was that life experience is huge. Oh, yeah. I had a guy that I knew, this is years ago, 2007, and he went into his oral interview. And a lot of times these candidates come to the application process and they have graduated high school, done nothing for 3 years and then applied to be a police officer. And so he went into the oral board And he told me this. He literally went to the oral board and talked about Bandcamp. And then he goes, "God, I failed. I don't know what happened." So he went back into the second, he took it again, second time, and he talked about Bandcamp again. And he failed. He had no life experience. And they're going to go, "You know what? You're coming in here and you want us to give you a gun and a badge and you want to maybe take someone's life."
Yeah.
And you're telling us about Bandcamp. And the phrase Bandcamp is really just a catch-all for you haven't
done stupid shit.
Yeah. You've done nothing in your life to tell us who you are. So he went out, he volunteered with the police department and he did some other stuff, ride-alongs or whatever it is to mature him up. And he passed the third time. So a big deal is life experience. That's a catchphrase for all departments.
Oh, yeah. You ask FTOs. FTOs will ask when they get a new trainee, does he have any life experience? What kind of life experience does he have? Huh. It's a big question.
But there's people that I've sat across the table interviewing them during their background interview. And it was like literally they woke up one day and they go, "I can't find a job. I can be a police officer." And that's the mentality. So if you go into the whole thing about the oral boards is you've got to sell yourself. And if you go in there and go, "Well, I graduated high school and I was in government, the government club," and just, you know, stuff like that, you've got to go in and go, "Yeah, well, I was a Boy Scout and I did this and I've gone on ride alongs and I did a jail tour. And then I also volunteered with a DUI task force." They're going to go, "Oh, okay, well, this person's a little more mature," or "I was in the military."
Right.
Exactly.
Military's big.
Yeah. Well, because a lot of, you know, a lot of the things you learn, a lot of the maturity, the conflict resolution, the paramilitary experience, you know, the marching, you know, these are all things that you can carry over. But I think people also fall into this trap of not using, like, they kind of throw common sense out the window when oral board questions really are a lot of common sense. For example, I remember one we used to give was you get a 459 alarm way up in the hills of the city.
Which is burglary, for those who don't know.
Oh yeah, sorry, I apologize. You get a burglary alarm and it's a 15-20 minute drive up into the hills, and your backup officer's almost, you know, you're 15 minutes away, he's about 5 minutes away, so he's gonna get there first. And you're assigned the call and you jump on the freeway to go. And as you're driving down the freeway, you look over and you see this old couple towing their camper trailer on their trip across country. And you see that the tow hitch is starting to come loose on this camper trailer. What do you do? And
you radio your partner and tell them to lay off.
Well, that was the whole thing. So
park down the street.
You got to think of, in that question, you got to think of a couple things. Number one, the first thing I would say, and I know, I'm sure Ken will agree with me, every single answer you give, every single question they give you, the first question you should ask yourself or look at in the scenario is, are lives at risk?
Yeah, morality.
Right. Are lives at risk? That is your number one thing, because if there is a imminent threat to life versus a potential threat to property, an imminent threat to life is always going to take precedence. If you can't see that this trailer coming unhitched in the middle of a freeway at 75 miles an hour is a greater threat than the burglar alarm at somebody's house when your buddy's almost already there, then they don't want you.
And some agencies actually have that in their motto or their mission statement, or plaster on the side of their cars: protect and serve, reverence for human life, you know, things like that. And you got to think about that. And if you do your research and you know these things, you'd be like, okay, well, wait, hold on one second. Is that reverence for life? Is that protecting and serving? Yeah, it's protecting. That's serving, because you're stopping them from crashing and killing some other people or killing themselves. And it's really easy to pick up a radio and you tell your partner, "Hey, lay off down the street. I got this." Let them know what you got. Tell dispatch, "Interrupt my call," you know, and then you go, 10-8 code six, whatever your agency calls for. And you pull those people over and you stop them and you let them know what's going on. Like, "Hey, you're not in trouble. Like, your tow hitch is about to come off," and then you get them.
And now I got to go.
Yeah. And then you boogie
and you get them to a safe location. Then you boogie and you tell your partner, hey, I'm going to be 10 minutes out, 5 minutes out. And then you show up and you meet down the street at a good location. And if he's been working a hot minute and you tell him, hey, lay off. And most partners, if you're going to work an L car configuration, most will lay off.
L car anyway. Meaning solo officer.
Right. And then you mean solo. And you're going to be in an A car means two. But if you're going to be rolling solo, a lot of agencies rolling an L car configuration, they're going to lay off anyway. So they're going to wait till their sister car.
Yep.
Like a lot of agencies do it, arrives with them. So they can't.
Yeah, you don't approach alone.
No, because you can't search. You can't go and enter a house with two people.
You can't effectively conduct a search alone. You can't effectively conduct an arrest safely. There's so many things. So think of the threat to life. I would say, Ken, what do you think about if there's ever a choice between somebody who's injured and chasing a bad guy, always treat the injured person as if, you know, you can't leave a gunshot victim, whether it's a citizen or your partner, you can't leave them behind to go chase a bad guy. Doesn't matter what the scenario calls for.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of times they'll ask you questions that are maybe scenario questions and you've never been a cop.
Right.
And people come out of the oral interview and go, they asked me these questions. I've never been a police officer. I didn't know what to answer. What they're looking for is common sense.
Yes,
exactly.
And you can say, I have had candidates say, and I said, look, I'm not a police officer. I don't know the pertinent laws pertaining to what I can and can't do there, but common sense would tell me that I need to consider X, Y, and Z as I approach the situation. And that is a completely acceptable answer. They know you haven't been to the police academy. In fact, you would come across a little cocky if you did start spitting out penal code sections and policy and procedure in the oral board.
Yeah, what you don't want to say is, yeah, in fact, one time I saw a guy stealing a candy bar at 7-Eleven, and I ran outside and I tackled him.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear that either, because you're stupid. Yeah. You're an idiot.
Yes. So clearly you have no judgment.
And that's basically, they got a few minutes to determine this. You know, the whole thing hinges, your whole career hinges on this interview. And some people, they can do the tap dance. They're good interviewers.
Yeah.
And some people just totally suck.
Get the bed.
Interviews. And so preparation is everything. And if you can find you know, the department that you're applying for, if you can find sample questions, if they have practice, like some departments have mock interviews that you can go,
yeah,
you know, do anything you can do, because that oral interview, I can't stress enough, man, that's everything.
Yes,
it is.
And then backgrounds. And this is where Ken's particular expertise as a former background investigator comes into play, because let me tell you, we get questions. Hey, this, I did this, and or I've had this happen, and did I put it on my background? And my default answer is always, if it's true and they ask, put it on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of departments that can forgive past, you know, something stupid you did 6 or 7 or 3 or 4 or 10 years ago, because they can say he was a different person then. But if you're the kind of person that would lie about it today, then you're definitely not the kind of person we want.
Exactly. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've sat across the table and I've asked people, why did you not tell us this? And they say, well, I talked to my buddy. And he's a cop. And my buddy told me not to put it down. And the one question I ask him all the time is, how many backgrounds has your buddy done? None. Yeah. So the thing is, though, and what you're saying is that when it comes to backgrounds, you can, departments will forgive a multitude of sins, but where people get in trouble is not, they don't get DQ'd for what they did. They get DQ'd because they lied about it.
Right. I got fired from a job when I was 16 years old, did something stupid, got fired for it. But when I became a cop, they always asked for 10 years worth of employment history. Well, I wasn't over 26. So that firing for doing something stupid when I was 16 years old was part of my screening process. It was on my personal history statement. And when they asked me about it, I said, I did something stupid. It happened like this, X, Y, and Z. I got fired. I learned never, ever to do that again. I took complete responsibility for it, and I moved on with my life. And as you can see from my employment record, nothing like that has ever happened to me again. That is way better than them going, this sneaky motherfucker got fired when he was 16 and he thought we wouldn't find out.
Yeah. And it's amazing how background investigators are mighty, mighty big minded brains or huge people. We just are amazing. And we find out stuff like it could be something as simple as a reference letter. Has he ever done anything? Yeah, he got fired that one time, but he handled it so good. You know,
yeah.
And then, or there's something out there now. The companies are using, it's called the work number or similar. And the work number is just a way to kiss off people who are trying to do backgrounds and things like that, where it's a computerized system. You type in someone's social security number in, and every job that they've ever had comes up on this printout.
Wow.
If they subscribe to the, it's a risk management thing that people are using now. And it doesn't matter how long you work there, one day or whatever. If that job comes up, there's different ways that people get caught, as far as, and agencies, a lot of times with regard to jobs, they go back 10 years. And if you got fired, if it's 100 years ago, they will check that job and it needs to pan out.
Yeah.
So I would, one of the huge, huge things about backgrounds is people get DQ'd for lying. And when it comes to lying in a police background investigation, if you get caught once lying, you are done with every agency you ever apply with. I can't stress enough.
Yeah.
If it can be embarrassing or whatever, just tell it. It's what it is, you know?
Yeah. And here's what I tell people is, if you decide that you're going to lie to get hired, right? Then you better pray and you better know for certain that you're lying about something that you are the only person that knows about it.
Yeah.
Because if one other person knows about it, you're fucked and they're going to find out. And once they find out about lying one time, like you said, you think that here's a question that's on the personal history statement. Have you ever applied to another law enforcement agency? Have you ever been in backgrounds with another law enforcement agency? Mm-hmm. Right. So guess what they're going to do? Do you think they might go to that law enforcement agency and say, hey, they were in backgrounds with you? What happened?
Yeah. Let's compare notes.
Yeah. All the time.
That's one of the reasons I tell people, take that personal history statement, download it off the internet, fill it out one time, keep it. And then every personal history statement you fill out from that point forward, it is going to be a hell of a lot easier for you to fill out because you'll already have the information in front of you and you will have consistent information every time. So you don't even make a mistake that looks like you were lying. People don't understand, there's Brady issues, right? And the Pitches motion, and without getting too technical into the details, the bottom line is, if a police officer in the United States of America is caught lying ever in a professional capacity, that becomes discoverable in court by defense attorneys, and a lot of DAs will refuse to put an officer on the stand because they know that every single defense attorney they put this officer up against is going to bring up that they have been caught lying. And then all of the, ask Mark Furman, everything they testified to up to that point is going to be called suspect, because if I can't believe you about this one thing, now I can't believe you about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And there are having a Brady issue, getting caught lying is an instant firing offense. No ifs, ands, or buts. You crash that police car, you better walk into the watch commander's office and be like, Sarge, I hit a pole. And take your days off. Tell him you hit that pole and take your days off. Gone are the days of having a buddy with a body shop and trying to get the crease in the door fixed while you're working graveyards because you know a dude who's got some extra decals.
And if you're a police officer and you get caught lying, you're fired. You can get fired for that.
Yeah.
So lying is not a good way to start.
No,
not at all. And were you going to say something there?
Oh, I was going to say my dad, that was one piece of advice. Cause I asked him about, like, you know, some of my dumb indiscretions as a kid. And, you know, the piece of advice that I got, and when I come across people that are worthy of advice from my father, I say, my dad told me, you want to start a profession that requires the utmost integrity and honesty. You want to start out your career in that profession with a lie. Mm-hmm. You really want to lay that foundation at the bottom of this? I was like, oh, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good way to put it.
And one thing to consider is there's a lot of agencies that use polygraphs.
Yeah.
And you have to consider that the line starts on that PHS. When you lie on the PHS, and then that's the first lie. The second lie is when the background investigator asks you, is there anything on the PHS that you were dishonest about? That's your second lie.
Ding.
When you go to the poly and you look at that poly, and you better believe that's the pucker factor right there. That yep. poly is a machine. It does not give a crap about looking at your eyes and seeing your body language. The poly is going to, your body's going to betray you with all your heartbeat and your breathing and you're fidgeting around. And the poly is going to tell the examiner, yeah, something's up. And then once you go in there and you go, yeah, well, I forgot to mention that I did this thing. That's your third lie.
Right.
And you may be able to fool people before the poly, but once you get to the poly, most people can't handle the poly and they get caught lying.
Unless you're a sociopath.
Unless you're a sociopath.
Yeah. I hate polygraphs. It's one of the, I'm kind of like a guilty conscience person, you know, just inherently, you know, as being raised in a Christian home, like we were taught, like it's almost as bad as, you know, being raised Catholic, all the guilt. Right. But when you get on that poly, every single bad thing you've ever done is going to come rushing back into your mind. And if one of those bad things triggers that question or is triggered by that question, and it causes you to freak out, that's going to trip that poly right then and there for you. Mm-hmm. And they're as soon as they see that, guess what they're going to do? They're going to get out that fucking shovel and they're going to start digging. And whether you admit to it during the poly or not, they are going to run that thing down with every single person. And they're going to ask every single person that you gave as a reference, do you know two other people to give as a reference? And they're going to run it down and run it down and run it down. These people catch murderers for a living. You know, you think they can't figure out that you got fucking fired from McDonald's for stealing ketchup?
Chuck looks real serious. I'm feeling like we're reminding him of his poly.
And I hate him. Tell you what, I hate the poly. Cool. I hate it. I hate getting one. Like, and I felt so much better one time when I was working with a DA investigator who was the new polygraph examiner for the DA's office. And he goes, yeah, I call it the Ouija board.
But Ken, could you touch on the whole social media? That's going
to
be a big one.
That's the thing that I didn't have to deal with.
Because nowadays people put their whole life on social media, whether it be Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, what else?
Put your whole life on their social media. You don't, like all my stupid shit was done before everybody had a camera and a videotape, you know, like be a bit.
Because then they ask you a question. Well, have you ever been blackout drunk before? Oh, well, no. Or, just once. And then they see a bunch of your buddies or whatever, you're in college, and they see a bunch of photos and photo albums that you never thought were there. And they go to one friend, to another friend, to another friend. And if they're not, a lot of people don't keep their stuff on private. If it's not on private, it's open for public view because it's a social network. And then they see all these times like, man, he was passed out here. He's passed out here. He had penises wrote on his face. He had words wrote on his face. He was duct taped. They poured food on him, because you see all these videos nowadays where people are passing out drunk and they're pouring food on them. They're writing on their face. And then you want to go and apply to be a police officer. And then all that stuff comes up. And then you're like, what about this? You're like, whoa.
Well, so Ken, how does the access to social media work? Because I know people are already thinking like, well, I'm just going to make it private before I go through backgrounds. But to my thinking, any background investigator worth his salt is going to say, okay, I'm going to send you a friend request on Facebook and I need you to accept it. And if you go, well, no, I'm not going to accept your friend request. Okay, thank you. Disqualified.
It's social media is a big deal with backgrounds now. California passed a law probably 3, going on 4 years ago. And each state is different. But California passed a law that said that employers cannot go in and get your password and your username and all that when they're doing pre-employment backgrounds, except law enforcement applications. So I can go in and I can't necessarily, I don't think I can ask you for your password, but I can ask you to log in and I can look at all your stuff. So background investigators will, during the meet and greet, they'll have you go in and sit down in front of their computer and they will go through all of your social media. And they have a list of all the social media sites that you've ever been a member of. And they will go through. And if it looks like something, the Facebook's the biggest one, right? So,
right.
And Instagram. And if they're, the whole thing about social media is people ask, well, I'm not a police officer. Why am I being held accountable for stuff before I get hired? The rule of thumb is this: whether you're a police officer active or you are an applicant, the rule of thumb is that, is there anything on your social media that will embarrass the department?
Right.
And if that's the case, whether you're applying or you're already on the job, that will cause you problems. The thing about the drinking, I've gone on social media before on different Facebook or whatever, and there's photos of bottles and bottles of booze. I saw a video one time and this guy, he turned 21, so he had to do 21 shots, and he's on video doing 21 shots. I had a candidate that had a photo of an LAPD badge, and he hadn't gotten into his background yet. And superimposed over the LAPD badge on his social media page was, "Hey, you bastards, when are you going to hire me?" He didn't make it. He didn't make it.
The answer is never.
But, and also with regard to what you put on social media, when your friends tag you on social media,
right?
What are you allowing? Who do you hang out with? What are you allowing on your social media? Your friends will reflect on you. So the whole thing about social media, man, you just post what you ate today at the restaurant and your puppy dogs, and that's it. And, you know, don't allow people on your social media to tag you with stuff, stupid stuff.
I feel like we could, I mean, we're out of time, but I feel like we could just keep going. Kid, could we have you back? I want to have you back just to tell some stories, because I know from working in LA, the LA, the years you worked, I know you got stories.
Got stories.
But also, I feel like we really, I'd like to maybe do another episode where we follow up and continue through the background process, because I know we're going to get questions about what are automatic disqualifiers. What kinds of things can people do to kind of defend themselves in the background process when they do have some shit that's, you know, it's kind of scandalous? Or how long do I need to wait to start applying if I did something stupid? Or is it even worth it because it's an automatic DQ? So I hope you wouldn't mind coming back and talking about that kind of stuff in another episode.
No, that's great.
Great. And then we'd also like to have you back for stories. But Chuck, do you have anything to share?
No, I mean, I would just say clean up your social media. That's going to be a big thing. You clean it up. Clean up who your friends are.
Mind who you keep. Just start doing that anyway.
Exactly. Mind who you keep anyways, because, and I know a big thing, because when I first applied, social media had it was in its infancy. And I deleted friends from high school, and I just fresh out of the military. And I was like, well, that dude smokes pot. Like, we really haven't like kept in touch, but we were friends on Facebook. When it came out, I think it had only been out, I'd only been a member for maybe a year and a half at that point. And I was like, well, I don't talk to him anything. I'm just going to unfriend him, block him, whatever. Because I didn't hang out with him, but I didn't need people like that, especially if I'm applying for a job. I don't need people who are doing that in their life, even though I'm not hanging out with them, to be associated with my social media account.
Right, right.
And, you know, I just...
And don't stop smoking pot 1 week before you start the testing process. And
that's another thing. When I did that pulley function with the Marines, and that was one of their staff sergeant there, it was like, dude, he's like, that's a big thing. We have all these kids out here, and it's California, pot's legal, right? When they're 18, whatever, and they're smoking pot and they pop on a piss test and they're like, oh, it's just CBD. I use CBD. Well, listen, like, that's state legal, not federally. And if once you're a government employee, you're under federal law. Like,
Just because pot is legal in California doesn't mean cops are out there using it, and you can't because you're a government employee.
Right.
You're under different standards and held to a different level. So if you're like the biggest pothead out in California or in other states that it's legal, and then you're like, I want to be a cop, but I want to continue to use, and then you try to do it, you're not going to get hired. This job isn't for you. And so like that was the biggest thing that he was running into. He was having people getting disqualified because they were using CBD. Now, whether they're using CBD or not, I mean, generally it's a, you don't do it. If this is a job that you want to do, especially in the military or any type of government job or federal job, you cannot use anything that is federally considered contraband. Like it's not going to work out for you, and you're going to get fired, and you're going to be, well, that's not fair. Well, it is fair because
fair is where you go to get cotton candy and stuff and monkey shit. Right. Life is not fair. Well, so, Ken, I think we should tackle the rest of backgrounds. We should also tackle drug use. Because those tie into what we were just saying, which is some of the things that will automatically disqualify you. And if you've done this, you should probably just never, ever apply because, you know, how long since my armed robbery conviction should I?
We've had people apply that they're currently on probation. I'm on probation right now today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you'd be surprised at the sometimes the intelligence level.
And then I also, like I said, I want to talk about a little bit about Chief's interview and a little bit about the psych test, because the psych test is another place where people can easily fuck that up. And I've got a story to share about, some people I know. However, I need to save that for later. Ken, why don't you tell our audience too, again, where they can find you? Because you're a great resource for people that are listening who are in the military, that are thinking about getting into law enforcement, or young people that are looking to get into law enforcement as they get older, get some life experience. So where can they find you, your website, your services, and your podcast?
Yeah, I do. When I left the background unit in 2018, I started policebackground.net, and I do pre-application consultations. So I go over the PHS, I send out a PIQ, we do a video conference. The whole thing takes about an hour and a half. And so that's at policebackground.net. All they have to do is go and fill out a contact form. I'll get the information and get the ball rolling for them. By the time I get done with them, there will be no surprises going into the background investigation.
Right.
They'll know how to answer everything. And then we do the Police Applicant Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we publish an episode. So if you just search for the Police Applicant Podcast, I think it pops up number one. And the cool thing is for policebackground.net, for the police consultations, I'm the only one that does it in the U.S. and Canada. And there's nobody else
that's great
that helps candidates. But I've been doing it since, like I say, 2007. So now it's just a company that I have. But if anybody's interested,
I can tell you right now, if I had had a resource like that when I was going through the process, I was lucky enough to have like mentors, that people that had been background investigators and stuff like that. But there are so many people that don't have access to a background investigator to ask direct specific questions. Right. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I'm speaking a little bit for Ken in giving this caveat. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're hiring Ken for his services, don't fucking lie to him.
No.
Defeats the purpose.
Like, Ken's not there to judge you. Ken's not there to, make decisions about your future in law enforcement. Ken is there to evaluate your personal history statement, your background, and give you the tips that you need to effectively get you employed in law enforcement. So lying to him really does you no fucking good.
Right, exactly.
Right. You're going to be like, well, Ken didn't prepare me for this. Well, fuck you. You kind of didn't tell Ken about that.
That's true. It's not the best way.
I would guess it's happened.
I've had candidates that hire me. It's their money. But if I base the consultation and my recommendation as to whether they'll pass the background or not based on what they tell me.
Right.
And if they don't give me the whole story, I can't tell them how to fix it, how to make it look better, or how to prepare themselves for any questions if they're not going to be honest with me. But if they want to spend the money doing that, they can, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can.
You
kind of your call.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Ken. Anybody that wants to email us, they can always do that at mailbag.warstories@gmail.com. We've got some announcements coming up. Anybody that listens to both War Stories or more The Locker Room, we've got announcements coming up. I had some stuff on my social media that I've posted, and I've talked about the upcoming move. Unfortunately, the upcoming move won't kind of start settling down until the middle of May. So War Stories fans, you may experience some hiccups. I am trying to arrange it so we don't even have to drop an episode or two in that process of either Locker Room or War Stories official. John's, you know, got his stuff going on, which we'll get into at some point. But we're going to keep going. We're going to, you know, endeavor to get through this process of relocating my headquarters. And I know Chuck's down to help out and be with us as much as he needs to. Right, Chuck?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, so we will have some updates in the future, but just stick with us. And if maybe some of your people that have ordered merchandise, if you didn't get it, send us an email, tell me, because in the packing and process, you know, I can't tell you, we haven't dropped the ball. We always try to make it up to you. I've sent free patches out to people for having too big of a delay on shipping their orders. But we really do try to stay on top of this stuff. But again, it's just a couple of dickhead, you know, cops, veterans that are, you know, doing this out of their house. So it's not the Adam Carolla show or Joe Rogan by any stretch of the imagination, but we are here for you guys. And on that note, I want to thank Ken for coming on, and I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to have you back for two more episodes. We'll get those scheduled.
Yes, and, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah. Chuck, thank you for bringing Ken, because Chuck actually knows Ken and brought him to us. So that's really amazing. Go check out Ken's podcast. Where can they find it? And what's it called?
Just Google the police applicant podcast. It'll come up. We're on Apple Podcast and Spotify and some other ones, but those are the two big ones.
All right. Awesome. Well, on that note, Chuck, if that's it, then I would like to tell our audience, as usual, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.